Ms. Scott.
May it please the Court. The District Court abused their discretion when they precluded evidence regarding Antonio Eubank's girlfriend's prior conviction for carrying a firearm without a license that is a Class C felony under Indiana law. Mr. Eubanks was charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm. At the time of his arrest began when a 911 call was placed from a Family Dollar store and for theft in progress. During the 911 call, the store clerk mentioned that she saw a gun fall from Mr. Eubanks' pant leg or somewhere in the neighborhood of his pant leg. When they were leaving the store, they got into a car that was neither owned by Mr. Eubanks or his girlfriend at the time, Ms. Maffitt. And the officers that arrived on the scene ordered them out of the car and placed them in handcuffs, both Ms. Maffitt and Mr. Eubanks. While they were outside of the car, a gun was seen inside the car behind the passenger seat, or what would have been behind the seat that Ms. Maffitt was sitting in and in front of the seat where Mr. Eubanks was sitting. At that time, Ms. Maffitt declared that the gun was hers. She said, "That's mine." Mr. Eubanks decided that he would say, no, I'm going to be a man about it. The gun belongs to me." Mr. Eubanks decided to go to trial. A jury found him guilty. At the time that we went to trial, we asked the court whether or not we could introduce evidence regarding Ms. Maffitt's specific felony conviction for carrying a firearm without a license because it went to the heart.
I don't see why her conviction is relevant at all. I understand why it's important. That is, she made a statement against penal interest only because of her prior conviction. But the judge makes the decision whether a statement is one against penal interest and therefore admissible. That's Rule of Evidence 104A. The jury doesn't make the admissibility decision, and I can't see why the nature of the penal interest is for the jury rather than the judge. So why is this a subject that should go to the jury in any form?
It should have been presented to the jury because it went to the heart of the defense theory, which is that Ms. Maffitt claimed ownership of the gun, knowing that full well the consequences of claiming the ownership.
That's simply the proposition that it was a statement against penal interest. That's what makes it admissible, despite the hearsay rule. But as I say, under the rules of evidence, that's for the judge. Why is right? You get the statement in because of the prior conviction, but you don't get in the thing that makes it against penal interest. Supposed to stop with the judge. That's the question I'm asking. Why does that go beyond the judge?
Your Honor, we believe that while the statement "that's mine" is support in the introduction of that statement to the jury is in fact for the judge to decide. We believe we understand that, but in taking it a step further, the actual conviction itself is important for the jury to consider when making a determination of whether or not that statement had. Whether or not combined with this statement, it was more likely than not that there was someone else responsible for the possession of a gun. So in looking at both things, when putting together a defense and trying to determine...
Do you have some authority for the proposition that the considerations that lead to a judge to declare a statement to be one against penal interest are also submitted to the jury?
No, Your Honor, I do not.
Anglo-American jurisdictions have been enforcing this exception to the hearsay rule for a very long time, and the fact that you have zero cases to rely on in this 400 or 500 year period is telling, is it not?
Yes, Your Honor, but if we look at this under what's commonly known as a reverse 404B theory.
It may be commonly known to some people, but it's not commonly known to me. When people say reverse and then name a rule, what they mean is, I'm making this all up because it's not in the rule.
Well, Your Honor, it's been
this rule keeps this evidence out, right? And if you say reverse rule X, what you mean is, despite the fact that the rule keeps it out, I want to put it in anyway. But that doesn't make it admissible.
Well, Your Honor, it keeps it out apparently only if the defense wants to introduce that evidence. 404B is
common. Only the defense.
Well, Your Honor,
only the prosecutor. It just says it's inadmissible.
Well, Your Honor, routinely in cases such as drug cases, gun cases, things of that nature, the government is allowed to introduce evidence with regard to prior convictions, specific prior convictions of defendants, and that is used not as propensity evidence, but as evidence to show knowledge, intent, motive, things of that nature. So we believe that it's properly applied.
Under Rule 404B, evidence is admitted when it is relevant and not unduly confusing, a waste of time, and so on. It's admitted under Rule 402. It could be excluded under Rule 403 or 404. But none of this is addressing the question I asked, which is why we even think about these rules when we're dealing with preliminary questions of admissibility, which are committed to the judge. The rules of evidence don't apply to the preliminary decisions on admissibility under Rule 4, under Rule 104.
Yes, Your Honor, and in understanding that and taking, I think that perhaps where, unless I'm misunderstanding the question, and taking it a step further and getting beyond the admissibility of this statement that's mine, we do understand that the prior conviction is the basis for the allowance of this statement. Our position is that we should also have been allowed to introduce specific evidence of the conviction because in looking at it, it goes toward the defense theory, and Mr. Eubanks was prohibited from completely introducing his theory based upon the fact that evidence was eliminated from the record based upon the district court's ruling. And so it's for those reasons that we ask that the ruling, that the Mr. Eubanks' conviction be vacated and this be remanded to the lower court for further proceedings. The court has no further questions.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Scott. Mr. Rinka.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Ms. Scott. Good morning, Assistant United States Attorney Matthew Rinka on behalf of the United States. Your Honor, it's the government's position that, first and foremost, the information with regard to the specific nature of the conviction in this case was irrelevant and inadmissible. That is so because the reason that the defense raised for admitting this evidence was not an appropriate one. In looking at the defense brief, the government's view is this encapsulates specifically what their theory is, and mind you, when I say their theory of admissibility, I'm talking about the only perhaps logical one that isn't propensity, because propensity, I think we can all agree, is not allowable, not admissible, propensity evidence. So in any event, so under Rule 404B, the defense is trying to admit this evidence because, quoting from the brief, Ms. Moffitt arguably knew she was making a truthful statement when she told officers that the gun was hers. That's on page 6 of the appellant's brief. She knew too well what the consequences of her action was.
It, you know, I raised with Ms. Scott the question why even the existence of the conviction should have been put before the jury, given the fact that the judge, rather than the jury, determines whether a statement is against penal interest and therefore outside the hearsay rule. I was puzzled by the fact that your brief makes nothing of the Rule 104 allocation of this question to the judge rather than the jury.
Your Honor, the government's position in that respect, we didn't address that issue. The reasoning would be that the court allowed in, as an initial matter, the statement, the gun is mine, and the issue of the conviction. The government saw the opportunity to address the issue of whether or not the court should have gone further. We did not address the specific issue that Your Honor raises. That's true.
I would think it's just hornbook law that the thing that makes something admissible as outside the hearsay rule is for the judge and not the jury. You don't re-argue the admissibility decisions to the jury.
And the government does not disagree, Your Honor. The issue that we were addressing perhaps was a separate one that we thought was more, perhaps erroneously so, more pressing, given the analysis in the appellant's brief. And that analysis was that there was no logical way under 404, given the arguments that were being made for the specifics of that conviction to come in, because nothing with respect to Ms. LaFonda Moffitt's state of mind, nothing with regard to what made her stand silent as Mr. Eubanks subsequently took ownership and possession of that firearm was relevant. Interestingly enough, it's also apparent from the record that Ms. Moffitt did not actually go back on her initial statement that firearm was hers. She then subsequently stood silent while Mr. Eubanks said, no, it's mine, but she never negated that initial admission that it was hers. The only suggestion that Ms. Moffitt allowed Mr. Eubanks to, quote-unquote, rescue her were arguments of counsel at trial. So anything about her state of mind in making that statement, in the government's view, is completely irrelevant. Nevertheless, the judge did undertake the balancing test and determined that the actual existence, of the conviction was admissible. Nevertheless, he appropriately ruled, after weighing all of the arguments and all of the information he had, that admitting the specific nature would have been inappropriate simply because there was no logical reason for that to come in other than to show propensity, which is verboten and has been for years. So in the government's view, the defendant got everything he possibly could have wanted, perhaps more than he should have gotten, but in the judge's discretion, he had the ability to make the arguments that he wanted to make. The only thing he couldn't argue to the jury based on this ruling was the fact that Ms. Moffitt's prior conviction for carrying a handgun without a license made her more likely to carry in this particular case. The government also points out that in this particular instance, there was overwhelming evidence of Mr. Eubanks' guilt. Overwhelming. He confessed. The store clerk saw him with the gun. The police approaching the vehicle saw him making motions which were consistent with him placing the gun under the under the seat where the police actually found the firearm. That firearm would have been at his feet if the police hadn't pulled him out of the car and first secured him before looking in and finding the weapon. There was overwhelming evidence of his guilt. And so any error that can be ascribed, and the government doesn't believe there was any error at all, but any error that could be ascribed to the fact that the court did not admit the specific nature of the conviction was indeed harmless.
Did they argue in closing argument the fact that she was a felon, not saying what she did as a felon? And for, I'm sorry, Moffitt, did the defense attorney argue that as far as trying to, whatever this theory of defense is, that he was sticking up for her because she was a felon? And
the argument, as I recall it, was that this particular individual allowed Mr. Eubanks to rescue her because, if I recall correctly, it was because she would have gotten in a lot of trouble had she not, or had she stepped forward and continued.
Well, no. I assume they could argue that she was a felon, just couldn't say what she did. Isn't that, or not? Maybe not. I thought that was the problem. They didn't, it wasn't a question yet that she was a felon. It was a question of that she was carried an unlicensed gun, and therefore that would, we'll call it propensity or whatever you want to call it, then that's why it was objectionable, et cetera. But I just wondered if they argued at least the fact that she was a felon and therefore why he stood up for her.
To the jury, Your Honor?
Yeah.
I believe that argument was made.
That's what I'm asking. That's
I believe that argument was made. And as we pointed out in the government's brief, the argument that was placed to the district court, the reasoning that they wanted to admit that evidence was for that purpose, that they so they could argue to the jury that, hey, here's another person over here who initially took responsibility but then had a better thought about it because she, too, was a felon. She, too, could be sitting here at this table if she had persisted in saying, that gun's mine, that gun's mine, that gun's mine, which, of course, brings the government to one of the arguments, probably the final one that it reaches in its brief, and that is Ms. Moffitt could very well have been sitting at that table. Nothing under the law prohibits the government from prosecuting both Ms. Moffitt and Mr. Eubanks for the very same crime, which lends support to the government's argument that the whole thing was really irrelevant anyway. The fact that Ms. Moffitt could have been prosecuted for this, so what? In the government's view, the issue is Mr. Eubanks is sitting here. Was there substantial and evidence to show beyond a reasonable doubt that he actually possessed that firearm? And in fact, it did. Constructive and actual possession. But yes, Your Honor, to answer your question, that argument was made.
I'm not saying it's a good argument. I'm just saying they wanted to go a step further to show that she had a specific reason, that she was also a gun, whatever you want to call her. But anyway, I assume that was the case.
So, Your Honors, to wrap up, the government believes that the evidence that the appellant suggests should have been admitted was not relevant and should not have been admitted in the first place. To the extent that it was, the district court undertook the proper balancing test and limited the admissibility of that evidence appropriately. And even if there was error in this particular case, which the government does not believe there was, that error was harmless because the evidence in this case was overwhelming of Mr. Eubanks' guilt. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Rinka. Anything further, Ms. Scott? Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.